Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, accompanied by the Secretary of Labor, President of the AFL-CIO, Ms. Elizabeth Schuler, and United Food and Commercials Worker Member, Ms. Jocelyn Cruces.
Thank you, everyone. Please sit down, sit down. Let me, my opening remarks here is to thank the president for hosting us today, but I want to tell you a quick story. We were just back in the green room, and the president was talking to President Schuler and Jocelyn, and he said, this is Labor's house. And how often do you hear that? So I want to thank you, Mr. President, for hosting us all today, obviously, and your certainly unwavering commitment to America's workers, and you certainly truly are the working person's president. So thank you, Mr. President. And I just want to thank you as well for the honor to lead with the Vice President, the White House Task Force on Worker Organizing and Empowerment. Certainly, we're putting the power back into the hands of working people in this country, which is exciting to do. And before I go further, I just want to thank all the workers that are here today, any essential workers, all the folks that have been working hard for the last 18 months and throughout your entire career. Thank you. I want to give a special shout out to Jocelyn, who's going to come up here in a few minutes and say a few words. I want to thank you, Jocelyn. To the labor leaders in the room today, thank you for the work that you do for our country. I know many of you personally over the years, and I know that all of you worked hard. To the staff here at the White House, I want to thank you as well for putting this incredible event together, setting the tables up, setting the chairs up, and doing everything you do. So we should give them a round of applause, the people. Labor Day has certainly been special to me. I grew up in a labor household. My father was a laborer. I joined the laborers union. I followed my father into Laborers Local 223 in Boston. My Uncle Pat was a laborer. My families are all laborers, and we have a few plumbers as well and a few other trades as well. So it was a special day for us. It was a day to celebrate our community. It was a day to celebrate the labor movement, the men and women who built what we have today, the eight-hour workday, the weekends, the overtime, pace, the protections, all the things that the labor movement has brought this country. It's been amazing. But today we have to rededicate ourselves to work, to fight for worker justice. And I know many of you are doing that every single day in your organizations and individuals that are here that do that. And today, to thank this president is what we're here for today, what he has been able to do in his very short period of time as president. And the president said this Labor Day weekend has been like no other we've ever seen, no other we've ever experienced. Essential frontline workers have carried us on their backs from the beginning of the pandemic. We know that. People working in grocery stores, our nurses, our doctors, our first responders, our lunch monitors in our schools that went home and gave our kids that weren't going to school lunch every day. Those folks, we depended on them so much during the pandemic, but we depend on them every day before the pandemic, and we certainly depend on them every day now since the pandemic. It's never been more clear. Our economy, our community, our very own lives depends on working people. And that's something that is really important. We need to continue to talk about that. Our country will never and must never forget that, what the essential workers and workers have done in the last 18 months. For that reason, we are inducting essential workers of COVID-19 pandemic into the United States Department of Labor's Hall of Honor. When we get beyond the pandemic, and many of you have been in the lobby of the Department of Labor, when we get beyond the pandemic, you have to come back in. You'll see legends on that wall. Legends like Cesar Chavez, legends like Mother Jones, legends like the 9/11 first responders that are on that wall. And everyone has a story behind what they've done for the labor movement or for working people in this country. People who change the lives of workers and change the way that we think about work. that are on that wall. And that's quite honestly what we're doing with the essential workers. It's the kind of impact that essential workers have had over the past 18 months. They're no different than anyone on that wall. They made a special impact and continue to make a special impact every single day. And that's why we owe working people more than a debt of gratitude. We owe them our commitment to fight for good jobs, for better wages and safe working conditions every single day, for affordable child care and elder care, for job training, physical and mental health care, dignified retirements, things that we fight for every single day, freedom from harassment, discrimination, or exploitation, and the right to join a union if they want to join a union. They should have that right. In the Department of Labor, our mission is to empower all workers morning, noon, and night. And that's what we know. And that's why it's important for us to do that, because the president's plan would build back a workers' economy that rewards hard work, that rebuilds the middle class, that restores the American dream. We've all heard the president talk about that, whether it's in front of a TV camera, whether it's at a rally, whether it's in a private room in a union hall, or whether it's in the room next door here. That's what he believes in his soul. And it's something that I'm honored to serve as this president's Secretary of Labor. I'm honored to be here today for this great event. We had a Labor Day week, and now we're going to make a Labor Day week, maybe Labor Day month, Labor Day year. We'll keep going, keep moving. But I have the great honor to introduce a champion of workers and a good friend and a great labor leader, the new president of the AFL-CIO, Liz Schuler. Liz was elected after the tragic passing of our friend, President Richard Trumka, last month. It's a tough moment to step into the top position, but it's a critical moment in labor's history. There's no question about that. She's the right person for this job, and she's the right person to lead the labor movement. It's my honor to introduce the first woman ever to serve as the president of the AFL-CIO, Liz Schuler.
All right, good morning. Thank you so much, Secretary Walsh, and what an amazing morning to be in Labor's house. I like that, the White House, but Labor's house. I want to say thank you, President Biden. You are leading the most pro-worker, pro-union administration in history. And our labor movement is the single most powerful force for progress in the United States. That's right. And in the past two centuries, industry by industry, in factories, mines, mills, we challenged inhumane conditions. We created safety standards. We transformed grim, dangerous work into good, sustainable union jobs. And this administration gets it, because that's how unions built the middle class, and that's what we're going to keep doing. And that's why we celebrate Labor Day, and it's what we celebrate on Labor Day. Along with the working people, who through so many challenges are still delivering, feeding, teaching, caregiving, cleaning, building, rescuing, serving, and in so many ways lifting up our communities. We were, are, and will always be essential. And Labor Day was brought to you by the labor movement. And we would say that's an innovation the labor movement brought, was the weekend, to make life better for everyone. And to meet this extraordinary moment, we are building a modern, inclusive labor movement, a movement in every sector, every community, with women and people of color moving from the margins to the center. And unions, because unions are the best way to guarantee equal pay, close the wage gaps, and fight discrimination at work. We create pathways to the middle class for veterans, for those who've been sidelined, for everyone. The power of a good, sustainable union job is life-changing. And that's why an overwhelming majority, you probably saw last week, the Gallup poll, 68% of the public approve of unions. And 77% of young people, which is the most encouraging, support labor unions. Highest approval rating in 50 years. From tech to transportation to sanitation and more, working people are choosing to stand together in unions. Everything is lined up. We've got the public on our side, workers standing up and taking risks, and the most pro-union administration in history. This is our moment, and shame on us if we don't take advantage of it. But with labor laws written in 1935 and the corporate attacks that have chipped them away over time, you know today it's easier actually to stop a union than it is to form one. And that's why we need to pass the PRO Act, now named in Rich's memory, the Richard L. Trumka Protecting the Right to Organize Act. And we need the Public Service Freedom to Negotiate Act right alongside it. This is the foundation of our workers' first agenda. And this is the worker-centered change that we voted for in the last election, and that this administration is delivering with the Build Back Better plan. So we're putting everything we have into it. We're gonna pass it. Every working person and every family in every state would benefit in some way. Child care tax credits, the first ever federal paid family and medical leave benefit, a long overdue path to citizenship, infrastructure investments, apprenticeship programs, American-made industries, American supply chains made with good union jobs. That is the Biden-Harris vision for America's future. We have COVID-19, the climate crisis, technology. All of it has radically changed our lives and work. We are not going back to how it was before. And I hear from working people all across this country, we won't risk our lives in this pandemic for an unreliable, low-wage job. Our system of care is broken, and it should be seen as critical infrastructure. And we shouldn't have to work two or three jobs just to make it. One job should be enough. And it's the labor movement that will lead the transformation. We are innovating and fighting for what will be the next weekend. And with the game-changing leadership of the Biden-Harris administration, we will build back better with unions. That's right. To win in America where every working person has the right to a good, sustainable union job, and with it, an expansive new American middle class. The labor movement is open for business. We're just getting started, folks. Thank you so much. And now I have the honor to recognize the true hero in the room, as Secretary Walsh said, Jocelyn Cruces, who is keeping us safe. She is a pharmacy technician who is administering vaccines. She's educating others on the vaccine. She's a pharmacy tech at Safeway, UFCW Local 99 member. I know Mark Perrone's out in the audience. From Brisbee, Arizona. Welcome, Jocelyn.
Good afternoon. My name is Jocelyn Cruces, and I am an Arizona essential worker and member of the Union United Food and Commercial Workers Local 99, working as a pharmacy technician at a Safeway in Bisbee, Arizona. This past 18 months have been difficult and tested all of us in different ways. As a COVID survivor who was on oxygen for 30 days, I know I've in firsthand how dangerous this pandemic has been for workers like me, who couldn't stay at home and losing my beloved mother to this virus passed last year. I also know how devastating it has been for so many families across the country. After I survived COVID, I was afraid to go back to work, knowing how real the danger was. But my union and my customers showed me so much love and support. They are the ones that helped me feel better when I got back to work. When the COVID-19 vaccine became available, I got it and decided to apply to administer the vaccine at Safeway and got certified by the state to help protect even more essential workers. I enjoy going to work every day now because I help save lives by administering vaccines and helping so many in my community to keep themselves, their families safe. I'm also thankful whenever I have the opportunity to share my story and help other people make the choice to get their vaccines. It is the best feeling. When I had COVID, I was worried I wouldn't make it. If you are not vaccinated, I hope my story inspires you to go get that vaccine. In this uncertain time, I'm thankful to our leaders who are standing up for all workers. Working parents like me need pro-work policies like the child tax credit. That is providing so much support and financial assistance that helps so many of us provide for our families. As COVID risks continue for workers like me, we need the Congress to do more by passing the Build Back Better legislation that will do much to support American working families. I'm so thankful to be able to share my story today at the White House and to be a voice for workers and labor across the country. It's now my honor to introduce the 46th President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Jocelyn, thank you. Please. Thank you, Jocelyn. Please sit down. Thank you. Nothing to it, is there, Jocelyn? Just walking in and stand at the podium and speaking in the White House. Nothing to it. You did a great job. Thank you. Before I really begin, I want to say that I think one of the biggest things that's changed is my dear mother, God bless her soul, used to say, out of everything bad, something good will come if you look hard enough for it. And I think one of the good things that's come out of this god-awful crisis regarding COVID is ordinary people who never thought about the technician at the drugstore, never thought about the grocery store worker, never thought about what that firefighter has to do when they go in, they don't ask, do you have COVID or not? Never thought about the people who keep this country up and running before. I really mean this sincerely. It's not a political, it's a reality. And I think people went, whoa. And instead of, which was a good thing, banging pots and pans when people came back from rescuing other folks, I think they began to realize, you know, this is part of the deal. And to use my dad's expression, and I mean it sincerely, and a few of you knew my dad, he said, everyone's entitled to be treated with dignity. And that's what the labor union is all about, dignity. It provides dignity for people who deserve to be treated differently. And I want to thank Jocelyn, and I want to thank President Shuler, Madam President. I know you didn't expect to be in this role at this moment, but as I told you before, I believe that the future of American labor is in very good hands. I really mean it. Thank you. And I want to welcome everyone to the White House. And I really mean that. This is your house. It's not hyperbole. It's a fact. This is your house. I wouldn't be here without you. That's, again, not hyperbole. In my White House, you'll always be welcome. Always be welcome. Labor will always be welcome. You know, you've heard me say many times, I intend to be the most pro-union president, leading the most pro-union administration in American history. But I think one of the reasons I'm able to do that is the public is changing, too. You've changed the public. You've educated them a lot. I want to thank the dues-paying members of the laborers, Marty, Marty Walls, who's helping make sure that we keep the commitments across our entire government. And before I go any further, I'd like to pause for a moment of silence to honor the hundreds of union workers and essential workers who have died from COVID-19, and honor a buddy, John Sweeney, who we lost earlier this year, and to honor a truly dear friend, Rich Trumka. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. This is real. One of the things I admired about Rich is that he understood what people in this economy are really facing. He, like most of you, felt it in his bones. He understood what had happened to workers in this country, like you do. I've got to know a lot of you really, really well. You just feel it. You taste it. You understand it. I get kidded by my staff for all these years, and I say, I trust the person most who arrives at the right decision when it starts in their gut, goes to their heart, and then they have the ability to articulate it because it goes to the brain. They're the ones that never back down. They're the ones that stay with you. The ones who arrive at intellectually are the ones that are the ones that first, I welcome that. But they're not the ones who are stay to the end. And, you know, Rich understood the past and the challenges like so many of you who've lived and led through these moments. But he also understood the future. I think he understood who built this country and the tools that were needed to build it back and build it back better. You've heard me say it 100 times. We're the only country in the world that goes into a crisis. And when we come out of it, we're stronger than we before we went in it. That's by building back better. We're going to build back better. We have to. We must. We will. Because that's who we are. That's what America is. On Labor Day, we honor the dignity of the American worker. And every day, we remember that America wasn't built by Wall Street. They're not all bad folks on Wall Street. I'm not suggesting that. But they didn't build America. It was built by the middle class. And unions built the middle class. You gave workers a voice. All the way back from my great-grandfather Blewett, who was a mining engineer. Back to the days of the Molly Maguires and all the way and folks were treated in Northeast Pennsylvania in the coal mines. You gave people a voice. Molly Maguires, they were a little tougher. You gave them a hard time. You ended up on the doorstep in a bag. But, you know, think about it. What are the basic things? My dad used to say, you know, we just ought to give people ability to just be able to take a deep breath, have a little bit of breathing room. And what are those things? Well, health care, a pension, God willing, higher wages in a safer workplace, and protections against discrimination and harassment. That's not asking too much. We fundamentally transformed how we live and how we work in this country. The reason we have is because of the victories won by labor. I'm going to be a bit repetitive. The eight-hour day, the weekend, you know, time and a half for overtime, safety standards, sick days, victories for all of us. Because I might add, you know, I notice when you all do that, everybody benefits, whether they belong to a union or not. Whether they belong to a union or not. When unions win, workers across the board win. That's a fact. Families win, community wins, America wins, we grow. And despite this, workers have been getting cut out of the deal for too long a time. You know, from 1948, after the war, to 1979, productivity in America increased by more than 100%, while the pay for American workers grew by nearly 100%. And then along came 1979, and everything began to change. Productivity in the country has grown almost four times faster than pay since 1979. That means the workers have been giving much more to their employers' bottom lines than they've gotten back in their paychecks, breaking the basic bargain of this country. The bargain was if you work hard and you contribute to the welfare of the outfit you work with, you got to share in the benefits. Well, that stopped for a long time. So, you can carve out your piece of the middle class and make it a possibility. That's what got taken away for a lot of people. Instead, some people started seeing the stock market and corporate profits and executive pay as the only measure for economic growth. By the way, the stock market has gone up exponentially since I've been president. You haven't heard me say a word about it. I'm glad it's gone up. No problem. Look, let me tell you something. My measure of economic success is how families like mine growing up, working families, busting their neck, how they're doing, whether they have a little breathing room, whether they have a job that delivers some dignity, a paycheck they can support a family on. In an economy, you know, in the economy my administration is building, instead of workers competing with each other for the jobs that are scarce, everybody's mad at me because now, guess what? Employers are competing to attract workers, having to raise pay. No, I'm serious. Think about it. That kind of competition in the market helps workers earn higher wages. It also gives them the power to demand dignity and respect in the workplace. Simply put, worker power is essential to building our economy back better than before. It's just that basic. To counter corporate power, to grow the economy from the bottom up and the middle out. I'm so tired of trickle down. I ask, when has the middle class done better that the wealthy haven't done incredibly well? I can't think of a time that although when the middle class is booming and moving, everybody does well. And to give workers even more power, I also signed an executive order to improve competition in the economy, including calling for a ban on non-compete agreements that deny workers the right to change the job in the same field, even when there's no real reason for a company to stop them. It's all about suppressing wages. That's what it's about. In Congress, when Congress passed the 1935 Labor Relations Act, it didn't just say you can have unions, should be allowed. That's how it's kind of viewed for a long time. It said that we, the government, should encourage unions and collective bargaining, making it easier. That's what it said. I believe that every worker should have a free and fair choice to join a union. The law guarantees that choice. That belongs to workers, not to their employers or to special interests. That's why I signed an executive order creating a White House task force on worker organizing and employment to facilitate that choice whenever and wherever we can. Look, I want to thank Vice President Harris and Secretary Walsh, Marty, for leading that task force. That's why I want to see Congress pass the PRO Act and send it to my desk immediately. That's why I want us to extend organizing and collective bargaining rights to state and local government employees, like transit workers, first responders, healthcare workers, and other essential workers. And guess what? The public seems to agree with that as well. Government should never be a barrier to workers organizing. It's government's job to remove those barriers. But it's up to workers to to make the choice whether to organize or not, whether to form a union or not. And we need to help them understand why that can be the right choice for them. We know the economic reasons. Union members get higher wages, better benefits like health insurance and paid leave, protection against discrimination and harassment, and safer and healthier workplace. But there's another reason, a basic American reason. Workers who join unions gain power. Power over the decisions and the decision makers that affect their lives. Workers' voices are heard and heeded. In a simple word, a union means there is a democracy. Democracy. Organizing, joining union, that's democracy in action. And it's about dignity on the job, but it's also about creating good jobs. When I came to office, our first job was to stop the economic bleeding, and it was the worst bleeding since Roosevelt. We passed the American Rescue Plan. That delivered shots in arms and checks in pockets and provided that extra breathing room for working families. It helped state and cities keep essential workers on the job, including educators, police officers, firefighters, sanitation workers. And thanks to the part of the rescue plan named for Ohio labor leader Butch Lewis, over a million retirees and workers across the country they can trust that the pensions they work for and sacrifice to secure will be there for them. You know, with a bipartisan agreement we reached to rebuild America's infrastructure, we're going to be putting hundreds of thousands of people to work, including plumbers, pipe fitters, electrical workers, steel workers, so many other union workers, modernizing roads, bridges, water systems, broadband systems. Capping abandoned oil and gas wells that are leaking, over 100,000 of them, making the same salary as digging that well. It creates jobs for American workers and makes our cities and towns more resilient and better able to meet the climate crisis. And to keep those jobs here at home, when your government spends the taxpayers' dollar, it's going to buy American goods, made in America by American workers. Look, over the years, the Buy America Act became a hollow promise. It's been there for a long time. I'm going to make it a reality. The next stop is dealing with the ability to pass the rest of my Build Back Better agenda. Once-in-a-generation investments in our people, making housing more affordable, bringing down the cost of prescription drugs by giving Medicare the power to negotiate for lower prices. And you ought to thank Bernie Sanders for a lot of this. Making elder care and child care more affordable while improving the pay for home care workers and child care workers. Providing paid family leave and medical leave so that no worker is forced to choose between their job and their caregiving responsibilities. You've all fought for all these things. We got to make them available there. Provide 2 years of free university high-quality pre-K and high-quality pre-K 2 years that are needed. It shows that if you send a kid to school at age 3, 4, and 5, they increase by 56% the possibility of, no matter what the background, that they'll go through school all 12 years and do well. And when I asked, you know, Obama administration, I was asked to find out from the CEOs of the Fortune 500 what they most wanted, what they most needed, what was their greatest concern. And over, I think it's, don't hold me to the exact number, 348 or 47, I can't remember the number we got to, said the single most important thing is they needed a better educated public. But guess what? They weren't paying for it. And guess what? Does anybody think if we were starting off from scratch, setting up public education, we'd say 12 years is enough in the 21st century. So look, we have to invest in high-quality job training and apprenticeships in fast-growing sectors. Compete to give middle-class families a well-deserved tax cut for daycare and health care. And provide a significant monthly tax cut for working families with children. That's what it is. Everybody talks about my child tax cut. It is a tax cut for ordinary folks. That's what it is. And as part of that, I want us to see us finally provide dreamers, TPS recipients, farm workers, essential workers, a pathway to citizenship, bringing them out of the shadows so they can receive the protection and representation that our laws and our unions provide. Folks, we're making progress. Our economy has added 750,000 jobs a month on average during the past 3 months since I've been here. There are more than 4 million jobs since I took office. In the first half of this year, our economy grew fast at a fastest rate in 40 years. Unemployment is down. My Build Back Better investments are going to allow us to keep and progress and move further in the years to come. Just want to add one more thought in closing. While the pandemic has prevented me from traveling as much as I'd like, I've had a chance to meet with many of your brothers and sisters and many of you, the proud UAW members building cars and trucks in Pennsylvania and Michigan, and noting that the big three have decided that, along with the support of those unions, going electric, so we own that market. Steel workers in Portsmouth, Virginia. I remember longshoremen and firefighters in Columbus, ASME workers in Allentown, IBW workers and iron workers and nurses and grocery store workers in Cincinnati, plumbers and gas fitters in Maryland, AFT teachers in Virginia. And by the way, of course, I sleep with an NEA member every night, same morning. Same one. Jill had her first day of full-time teaching yesterday, this year, back to school. And look, I've talked with union transit workers, machinists, laborers, and welders in Wisconsin. We've had Teamsters here in the White House, and always the Teamsters always have my back. And last week, I met with the first responders in New Orleans. And on Monday, I dropped by some of the IBW linemen in Delaware helping recover from Hurricane Ida. You know, in the last year has taught us anything. It's what's essential. And what's essential is you, not a joke, you and your union members. Wall Street could go on strike, but all of a sudden, in the middle of this Ida, every IBEW member resigned, we'd be in real trouble. I say that to make a generic point. I think we significantly underestimate, and I think even you guys sometimes underestimate, the incredible value you bring to the safety, security, and growth of the economy. You know, you're America's heart and you're America's soul. And we all need to fight as hard for them and work as hard for them as we can. And I want to say, the press was very, very... Not just the press. A lot of people were very, very skeptical that when I was talking about we had to deal with the environment, that labor would never help. Well, guess what? Labor's the reason it's working. Labor stepped up because you all understand, and I made a promise and I'll keep it, that what we're talking about here is when you think of global warming, think of jobs. Jobs. All the jobs we're going to create. Making us, once again, the fastest growing we are now and most competitive economy in the world. So, folks, you do it all. I'm sorry to go on so long, but I can't thank you enough for all you've done for the country and what you've done for me over my career. You've educated me. You brought me along. And you've always been there. Now, I'm supposed to stop and walk out of the room here. I'm going to stop. With your permission, I'm going to walk into the room because I want to say hello to all of you. Thank you.